Okay, so I'm going to talk about time reparametrization symmetry and fluctuations in glassy systems. And this is a combination of several pieces of work. The latest is simulations in structural glasses done by Asita Parsayan, who is my student at Ohio University. But I'm going to mostly talk about earlier work with Claudio Chamón, Leticia Cugliandolo, José Luis Higuaín, and Malcolm Kenneth, which is more centered on spin glasses. So let me tell you physically what the general area is. So we are interested in glasses, and basically what happens near the glass transition, what's happening near the glass transition is that the relaxation time is growing very rapidly when the temperature is lowered. So you see here in the horizontal axis, this is 1 over temperature. The vertical axis is logarithmic, so you see a change of, for example, 12 orders of magnitude in the viscosity or the relaxation time in a very narrow temperature range. So this is the glass transition, and basically what this means is that eventually your relaxation time is going to be so long that in any experiment your system will not equilibrate. So this has some physical consequences. I mean, suppose for example that we take time equals zero as the moment when some change is done, for example the temperature of the system is suddenly changed, and then at some time tw, which we call the waiting time, we apply an external field to the system, and sometime delta t after that we measure some physical quantity of interest. Now these two experiments where the waiting time is, let's say, 1 hour and 2 hours, but the time interval after applying the field is the same in both cases, normally would give you exactly the same result, right? Your systems usually are time translation invariant, nothing happens, nothing changes. But in the case of a system which is not in thermodynamic equilibrium, actually this time matters and you get different results, and this phenomenon is called aging or physical aging. So in glasses we do have aging, and another issue that specifically we were interested in is the fact that near the glass transition there are very strong fluctuations. Basically, for example, this picture looks like a computer simulation, but it's actually from an experiment. It's an experiment in a colloidal glass, and basically all the little blue points that you see here and the big balls that you see are all representing the positions of colloidal particles, all of the same size. The size is more or less this size here. They are 1 micron size, and the particles that are highlighted as big are the 5% which are moving the fastest, and you can see that they are clustered in small regions of the sample, right? There is a big degree of correlation.
What's the difference in color?
The difference in color is basically you choose the particles who are nearest neighbors to each other, and you paint them the same color, and you call that a cluster. Okay, so these are neighboring particles, these are neighboring particles, and these are the ones that are not connected to anything. So another experiment, another way to see this kind of thing is an experiment done on polyvinyl acetate film with an atomic force microscope, which is sensitive to fluctuations in the dipole moments here in this small region. This region is of the order of maybe 30, 50 nanometers size, both in diameter and in depth. And basically what you measure there is noise. You measure the random fluctuations of these dipole moments there. And normally what you would measure in a macroscopic sample would be the power spectrum of the noise, basically how much energy you have per interval in frequency, and that would be a power law, usually with a power between 1 and 2, which would be something like this. Now what happens in this experiment is that At the time, 2 hours after cooling the system below the glass transition, there is an extra contribution to the noise, and the interpretation that they gave to this was that there was a region that was strongly fluctuating that was appearing under the tip. So it basically would correspond to one of these clusters where the particles are moving faster, basically. They are relaxing faster.
Is that reproducible?
That appears all the time, and they did a lot of statistics to understand, you know, how many of these they have and so on. It's a really very detailed work. So basically, the idea is to try to understand these fluctuations in glassy systems which are out of equilibrium. So basically, well, that's the motivation, and what I'm going to try to give you an idea about, and really the time is short, so it's going to be very superficial, but first of all, describe a little bit more the experimental situation very, very quickly. Then basically say what the symmetry under time reparametrization is, and how from that we get some predictions about the shape that this fluctuation should have, and then some numerical and actually a little bit of experimental evidence that this picture actually might be correct. So let me continue a little bit with experiments which show that glasses are out of equilibrium, and there is an issue that was discussed in much detail from 1993 by Kugliandor and Kurchan, which is the fact that in systems out of equilibrium, the fluctuation dissipation theorem is violated. So you can measure, for example, the correlation between a degree of freedom at two times, right? So this would be, for example, in the case of a spin system, you take the spin at one point, the spin at the same point, you multiply the two spins at different times, then you average that over the volume of the system, and you get a correlator. Now, I'm actually adding here a variable r, because I can perform this average over the whole system, or I can decide to perform this average over a small region in my system. And I'm going to, in the rest of the talk, I'm going to work with actually both of them. So what I'm going to use is either the global average over my whole system, or local averages calculated in small regions. For example, I take this region and I calculate a local average here. So this is a correlation between two times. Then I can also look at, for example, responses. So this is the effect of some external magnetic field on the spin at the same point where the magnetic field is applied, and usually it's convenient to use this integrated response, which is equivalent to the response to a step in the field. So this is the notation: at time zero, the system is cooled from above the glass transition to below the glass transition. There, the system starts to evolve out of equilibrium. We apply the field at time t prime. We measure something at time t. Now, the idea is that if the system was in equilibrium, there would be a linear relationship between these two quantities, which is given by this. Actually, in this plot, it would be a linear relationship between this quantity and this quantity, which would give me this line with a slope of minus 1 over t. And actually, what Kurchan found was that they could actually calculate the evolution out of equilibrium of these quantities and find that it deviates from equilibrium for values of the correlation below a characteristic value, which is the Edwards-Anderson order parameter. And another thing they realized was that it was very easy for the system to change its evolution along this curve to reparametrize the time variable. Now, this was actually tested experimentally in a spin glass, and the results look very promising, as you can see here. Okay, so the symmetry under time reparametrization. This is basically a toy example of the symmetry. These are the mean field equations that Kugliandola and Kurchan solved for a model which is called the p-spin model. It's just some spin glass model. So this is a non-equilibrium evolution. Here, all the correlators and responses depend on two-time variables. Again, I have to have the two-time variables because the system is aging. I cannot assume that they depend on time differences. And if I ignore the terms which are in whatever, pink or violet or whatever color this is, if I ignore this term, and this term, which are going to be small in the limit of large time separations, then I get basically these terms which are in black, and I realize that actually these terms are invariant if I perform the following change of variables. Essentially, I change C, the correlator C, to the correlator C tilde of TT prime, which is C evaluated at some H of T prime, where this change of variables for the time is the same for both of them. And the R, the response, is changed to the response evaluated at the reparametrized times the time derivative. So this, yes?
Is that just one C and one R?
Right, because this is mean field theory, so you just have the average over...
Trivial in a way. I mean, to show it's non-trivial, you've got to show you have to do the same time pre-parameterization for every correlation function and every response function in the system. I mean, there are many of these.
There are many of these, yes. Well, in principle, in this kind of mean field problem, it works for all the correlation functions that you can find. I don't know. Well, I mean, the proof that we did for the case where you have fluctuations is actually a proof that works on the generating functional, so automatically you will get what you were talking about. So, okay, so basically this is just a change of variables in these integrals. I mean, nothing more than that, right? I mean, and power counting, okay? Very simple, and the H is completely arbitrary. Okay, so this is a toy example, and then let's assume that actually this was true not only for the mean field solution. Let's dream for a moment, okay? Let's dream that this is true not only for the mean field solution, but actually it's true if we apply this to the fluctuating fields in our generating functional, in our path integral that describes the evolution of the system. If that was true, then we might imagine that we could have fluctuations which would be different at different points in the system. So basically what I'm representing here is the trajectory in phase space of some part of my system, which I can think of as one of these squares here. This is the trajectory for another part of my system. This is the trajectory for another part of my system. And what I'm saying is, I have slightly different reparametrizations for each one of those. Okay? And maybe these are the explanation for the kind of fluctuations I'm finding. So let me go into that in more detail. So basically what I want to do is I want to make an analogy with a ferromagnet with continuous rotational invariance, right? For example, a Heisenberg ferromagnet. So in the case of the equilibrium state of a Heisenberg ferromagnet, any rotation will leave the free energy unchanged, and actually if I'm looking at the free energy functional for any configuration of magnetizations, it's going to be invariant if I rotate that configuration. That's not any surprise. Now, what I'm saying is the following. Let's do something analogous here. So we have the point that represents our system in this C chi diagram, correlation integrated response, and the effect of this reparametrization will be basically to have a trajectory which is either faster or slower along the same red line. Now the result that we found was actually that the dynamical action, which describes the evolution of the system with the fluctuating local correlations and responses, is actually invariant under reparametrizations of the time variable. And what I want to do now is to try to extract some consequences from this, convince you that this is a fruitful idea, and then maybe if I have a few minutes, just sketch very briefly how one could imagine proving something like this. So again, I mean, the idea is the same way that in the case of the ferromagnet, the fluctuations with high probability are going to be the ones that change my free energy functional very little, which are the ones which correspond to rotations that are smoothly varying in space. In the case of a spin glass, I'm going to imagine that what I do is a reparametrization of the time variable, which is slightly different at different points in space, is smoothly varying. So what could I expect then? What I could expect is the following. If I draw again my chi c diagram, which represents the trajectory of the system as a whole, and I imagine that each region of the system is going along this trajectory, and the only real effect of the fluctuations is that some regions will go faster and others slower. Now, if I take a snapshot of the system, I would find points along this trajectory, but not many points away from it. Most fluctuations will be along the trajectory. So basically, one way of testing this idea will be to do a Monte Carlo simulation in a short-range interacting spin glass model, and actually measure these quantities locally and see if the points I find for my values of correlation and response in each one of these boxes are all clustered along this line. If I find something like this, it means that the idea doesn't work. So another consequence that one can extract is the following. Suppose that the correlation function has this particular shape, which is actually something that happens very often in these kind of systems. It's a function of a ratio of some function of t divided by the same function of the waiting time.
Is that numerical evidence or experimental waiting time evidence?
Well, there is. I mean, for example, the p-spin solution gives you that for the mean field. There is numerical evidence in the three-dimensional Edwards Anderson model, where actually h is actually you don't need the h. You get t over tw. It's really what's called simple aging. If you have the correlation or responses being dependent on the ratio between t and tw, that's called simple aging. And you find simple aging in the Edwards Anderson model. You find simple aging in many experiments also. Okay, so actually simple aging tends to be the most common kind of behavior, but it's not really universal. So let's take now our reparametrization of the time and make it space dependent. And basically what we are going to say is that this C, which represents this trajectory of the system, is going to be altered just by changing the values of the time to HR of t, making them fluctuating variables. And it's convenient to write HR of t as some exponential of some function phi r of t. And we can work a little bit with that, turn the crank. Basically, what one can do is write a free energy functional, sort of a lambda of free energy, but in this case for a dynamical problem, where the important thing is that we choose the terms in that functional so that it is time reparametrization invariant, and then we calculate the fluctuations of this field phi, and we find that it grows like this. So basically what this tells us is that the size of the fluctuations is also going to be a function of this h of t divided by h of tw, or in other words, the probability distribution of the fluctuations is going to be characterized by the value of this global quantity. In other words, if I try to look at my probability distributions for local quantities, the only thing I need to know is the value of the global quantity, which basically is going to tell me that many probability distributions for different times are going to be identical. Yes.
Is there any dimensionality in R? These results are for what kind of spatial kind?
Well, the thing is, okay, so there are assumptions in obtaining this result about the time reparametrization, which are basically physical assumptions about separation of time scales and so on. So that will happen if you actually do have a glassy system, and you may have a glassy system in some dimensions and not in some other dimensions. So that really comes in when you do this. Okay? Now the other issue would be what are the spatial correlations of these fluctuating variables, and that also will depend on dimensionality. Okay, so there are several places where your dimensionality could enter.
But the logarithm is not because of any spatial.
No. This is I'm really skipping over very fast here, but basically the idea is to take a particular approximation for this C0, and then it's convenient to go to a logarithmic change of variables for your times, and you can do that because actually your free energy functional is invariant under reparametrizations of the time, so you can go from t to log of t and everything works okay. And I mean, there are several things, but basically the bottom line, something like this. Now, I mean, there are approximations and assumptions here. I guess what I would say about this result is just it gives some inspiration that basically this probability distribution, again, which is going to be associated with the fluctuations of these variables, basically this number is telling me how much the extent of the, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm sorry. The aging of the laptop, yeah. Yeah, I forgot to turn on the power here. Yes. So, okay, so this logarithm, yes, comes from a particular way of approximating your C0. Okay? But in any case, the take-home idea here is that you get a prefactor here which is giving you the size of the fluctuations, which is controlled by this ratio, which going back tells you that it is controlled by the value of the global correlator. That's basically the lesson I learned there. Okay, so now I want to go very quickly over some numerical evidence and actually a little bit of experimental evidence. So, okay, still alive. Okay, so again, the idea was take your system, divide it in regions, okay, measure probability distributions of correlations and responses, see if you get something like this or something like this. Well, that's what is done here. This is a simulation, again, in a short-range spin glass model. This is an Edward Sanderson model. And it's done at 72% of the glass transition temperature, and you can see here these ellipses here contain 66% of this cloud of points, okay, two-thirds of the points. So basically what you see here is that this distribution is elongated along this line. These crosses here represent this red line. They represent the global, the values of the global quantities. and you see that the probability distribution is centered around this curve that represents the global evolution. So this is a two-dimensional probability distribution, the joint probability distribution of the local value of the correlation and the local value of the response. So that's one of the predictions, and it seems to work. The other prediction.
How big are your boxes?
So in this case, let me see. Yes. In this case, I don't remember exactly, but I think they were 3 by 3 by 3 spins, 27 spins. Okay.
The number 64 cubed.
That's the size of the whole system. That's the size of the whole system for the simulation. What's that?
Plus bulk, isn't it?
Oh, the crosses give you the bulk values. They represent this line here. So, okay, so that seems to work. Then the other prediction was, again, that if we had times such that the value of the global correlation was the same, then we would expect that the probability distribution for the local correlations would be the same. Now, this is a histogram of my local correlations, and I can see, for example, here there is a red and a blue curve. Both of them corresponds to a ratio between the final time and the waiting time of 2, and as I mentioned before, for this model there is simple aging, so when the ratio of the times is fixed, that means that the global correlation is actually fixed. So these two curves give you the same ratio of times, they give you the same global correlation, but one of them corresponds to a waiting time of 10,000 Monte Carlo sweeps, the other corresponds to a waiting time of 640,000 Monte Carlo sweeps. So the time differences in one case and the other are very different, right? In one case it's 10,000, in the other it's 640,000. So this is for ratio 2, for ratio 4, 8, 16, and here I really have only one curve. So that's another piece of evidence from a spin glass. In this case, it's a slightly smaller box. Hello. Okay. Did I miss something here? Okay, so I wanted to mention that one, going back to your question of the dimensionality. So if in principle, if one had a soft mode, a Goldstone mode, one would expect that there would be power law correlations, right? And this would depend on the dimensionality. But in this calculation where one obtains the reparametrization symmetry, there are actually terms which are small when the times go to infinity, which break this symmetry. Now these terms actually give a mass to the theory, and then instead of having power law correlations, you have exponential correlations. And here is a plot of the exponential, so the vertical axis is logarithmic here, and here are the correlations in the fluctuations of these two time objects between two points in the lattice. So I take a region here, I correlate them, and then I plot that as a function of distance for different ratios of times, and I see things like this. They look pretty much exponential. And then now if I extract parameters from these curves, I can get, so this is this shows the parameters from a lot of times. So here from time ratios of 2 to time ratios of 8,000, I go from here to this curve. You see that eventually for large time ratios, the curve scales. If I plot it as a function of 1 over the logarithm of TTW. So of course this is a very long extrapolation, but it's suggestive that maybe we have a mass that is going to zero, like 1 over the logarithm of the products of the times. Just maybe. Okay, so that was spin glass. And let me just mention a little bit of evidence for structural glasses. So in structural glasses, one can do a simulation in a system which is chosen so that it actually will be a glass. So it's molecular dynamics in a system with 8,000 particles. You thermalize the system at a very high temperature, and then you suddenly change the temperature of the coupling to the bath to a temperature which is 10% below the glass transition temperature. Then you let it evolve, and basically look at what happens in while the system is aging. So in this case, the correlation is going to be defined in a different way because we don't have spins. So we define the correlation using the cosine of some wave vector times the change in position, the displacement of the particle. And this Q is chosen at the maximum of the static scattering factor. It's essentially chosen at some point where the effects are very clear. And again, we can average this over the whole system, or we can average this over a box, a small box compared to the size of the system. And again, this quantity is going to be 1 if there was no change, right? If the particle didn't change its position, I have 1. If I have many particles and some of them didn't change their position, others did, I am going to have an average of 1s and minus 1s and get something close to 0. So this is a correlation that actually decays from 1 to 0. So again, I do a probability distribution for my local values of correlation, and I see that if I fix the global value of correlation, for example here at 0.5, I see these different, slightly different curves for different waiting times. So this idea that the probability distributions should collapse for fixed value of the global correlation gives me a good first approximation, but there is actually some drift. The drift is much smaller for very small correlation, and that's a different story. But at least as a first approximation, it does work. There is also an experiment. So this is an experiment done by some of the same people who have done the other experiment I showed before. And basically doing the same analysis, this is preliminary data, but you can see there are four green curves here all with global correlations corresponding to 0.75. There are four red curves with correlation equal to 0.65, and you see that there is a reasonable, it's far from perfect, but reasonably nice collapse. So that's basically the idea. You can look also at other quantities, like the one-dimensional displacement. Also, you see collapse when the correlation is fixed. And one can look at correlations in space. One can define quantities which are associated with changes in the system and look at the total correlation. Basically, the integrated correlation is here, and we can see that also it is a function of the correlation if one rescales the quantity by the value at the maximum. And also the correlation length in space is also a function of C only. So let me just summarize the ideas. Basically, there is a calculation that can be done with a spin glass with two spin interaction, which shows that if we do an RG calculation in time and go to the limit of very long times, the dynamical action is invariant under global time reparametrizations. Now from there, we guess that there might be Gostom modes associated with age fluctuations, and might be the high probability modes and may control the fluctuations in the aging dynamics. Now there are a series of tests, and we have tests in Monte Carlo simulations of 3D spin glass model in short range, and we see that, for example, one thing we expect is that this this joint distribution of the correlation and response is actually concentrated on this curve as expected. The behavior of the probability distributions for the C collapses when we fix T over TW. We find terms that give, we find a mass in the spatial correlation, and this mass seems to go to zero, but very slowly. I mean, it's really inconclusive, to be honest. And then molecular dynamics simulations in a structural glass model, basically we see something similar. The probability distributions of local to time quantities collapse approximately for CR, a little better for the one-dimensional displacements. And also we find a scaling form for the integrated correlation in space and for the correlation length in space, which in principle is sort of inspired by this idea, but we don't really have a very direct link for that. And also preliminary results in an experiment in a colloidal glass also show a result similar to this. Okay, so that will be, okay. Am I out of time?
Yeah.
Okay. So if anyone asks, I can try to sketch the proof. But okay. Anyway. Thank you.
We have time for one question.
Okay.
You mentioned that this parameterization variance was introduced in the context of mean field spin glasses, and we know that mean field spin glasses exhibit replica symmetry breakers. So I have questions in one. But is there any connection between this parameterization invariance and replica symmetry breaking? And next, if there is a connection, what can you tell about short range spin glasses on these breakers?
Well, okay, so the. As far as we can tell, the proof never uses replica symmetry breaking. The assumptions we are making are physical assumptions that are related to what happens in glasses in general, which basically don't have to do with replicas. They have to do with the fact that you have short time scales and long time scales, and they are separated. That's the only really physical assumption that goes into the calculation. As far as we can see, there is no input of that kind. Now, also the simulations are simulations done in short-range models, all of them. So, and they seem to work. So I wouldn't, I would love to give you a really, you know, very sharp answer, as all the evidence I know of points in the direction of saying that there is really no connection with replicas, but who knows?
Okay, well, let's thank you for asking. Sorry.